can you just look over your left shoulder, like scared of what's behind you for me, please?
And as the lovely music from Private Dicks fades into the background, we are back on the Unsalted Popcorn Podcast doing the wonderful directionless commentary. Thank you. Watching Doctor Who, and we are joined as ever by, oh, let me just get rid of that. I still don't need that in the way there. By the lovely, behatted, and besunglassed this evening, Laura Monmouth.
Hi, I'm not besunglassed. I changed the bulb in here and it's a lot brighter, and the hat means my normal glasses. Why would I be wearing sunglasses indoors?
Well, I was surprised. I just thought maybe the fame had gone to your head. And over on the other side, we have the wonderful Mr. Carruthers.
Hello.
And the young wee Morgan, who's just discovered that if you're a vegan, you can't eat chickens.
Hello.
The look of fear in her face. Oh. There'll be too many chickens.
Don't start. We're not having this conversation now because
No.
I'd like to get watching the episode in the next 5-10 minutes. Otherwise, absolutely, we're going to be, you know.
Yeah, no. We obviously thoroughly respect your right to be vegan.
That's very big of you. How kind.
I don't know. Do you know what? We're pretty amazing people.
I had heard that.
Yeah. I mean, just haven't witnessed it yet.
No, I'm still waiting. I mean, Laura has eaten vegan pizza and not died.
Yeah, it's quite nice.
I'll take that as a glowing referral.
I had a slice, didn't I? Didn't I have a slice and then a ball of dough or something?
Oh, that would be a Marmite and cheese roll.
A Marmite what?
A Marmite cheese roll.
Cheese roll, that was it.
We actually made vegan pizza for Morgan's birthday once because one of our friends is vegan, and the girl came, had what we made, considering like Morgan had about 12 friends here and one of them is vegan, we made probably enough pizza to feed all 12 of the kids, and the girl had one slice and then went, thank you very much, didn't have any more, and then I ate it and it was fantastic.
There you go, you see.
So it was very good, so there you go. It's obviously, you know, it didn't change my life in any way, shape, or form.
Well, how adventurous was that, before or after your heart attack?
It was before.
Oh, bugger.
Do you think that's what pushed it over?
I think it might have been.
The edge. I'm just kind of going, do you know, what is this? It's not meat.
Yeah, it was a shock to your Scottish system.
A Glaswegian not eating meat.
Yeah.
It nearly killed me.
Have you eaten pizza again? See if it happens again.
Absolutely. Morgan clearly just goes, you know, that's my chance for the mortgage to be paid off and get one step closer to the inheritance. Dad, have some vegan pizza.
Oh, there, he's died. Never mind. How are things in the land of wet clothes, Laura?
I'm better now. My washing machine is screwed. By the look of it. So I wear the same clothes every single podcast anyway. It's like I only own one pair of clothes, just like this and that green Yoshi t-shirt, that's it.
I didn't like to mention it.
No, I do. I have a habit of getting attached to clothes and then just wearing them constantly, just washing them and then wearing them again before they get through it.
At least you wash them, that's the important bit.
Well, I get occasionally, yeah.
I change their outfits every week as well.
Look, it's not my fault. Like, everything is now open apart from charity shops. Okay, I'm stuck with the same hat. If the charity shops are open, this hat would have changed.
Are they still not open?
They're allowed to open, but none of the, because it's all volunteers, isn't it? So why is a volunteer going to risk their health with a bunch of stuff which now has to stay in storage for 72 hours after it's been donated in case they catch something?
Fair point.
Why are they getting it? It's not worth the risk.
On that cheerful note.
On the flip side, though, I want them open because I want a fucking hat.
I could send you a Abraham Lincoln or even a pretend turkey hat if you want.
A pretend turkey.
Yeah.
I think it would go against Kansas ethos if it was a real turkey.
Yeah, it would. unless the turkey willingly
came out. Yeah, I won't eat them, but I will make headway out of them.
Yeah, if the turkey was willing to be submitted to hattery, you can't really argue with it. It's the killing and the suffering we object to. If the turkey happily goes, make me into a hat, well, who are you to argue? You know, it's just, them's the rules. I don't make them. Very quickly, other thing before we go into this, I've been telling everyone I know, but I don't haven't told you two because I haven't spoken to you. Have you either of you guys watched Galaxy Quest, the movie?
Yes.
Yes. There's currently a documentary on Sky about the making of Galaxy Quest.
Oh, fantastic. And I love Galaxy Quest.
Amazing. It's almost as good as the film itself.
Galaxy Quest is one of my favorites.
When was it filmed? I'm assuming it has Alan Rickman or some discussion with it.
No, it's only, I think it was 2017 or 2018.
Okay.
So, but there are...
Is it the 20th anniversary? Is that why they've done it? Was it 2000?
Actually, it would be 20th anniversary. It was 99.
It came out in 99.
Yeah, it was 99. Because one of the producers was initially Harold Ramis was meant to direct.
Yeah.
But he walked away from it, which is why we got Tim Allen, which I think was a good casting call. But one of the producers was saying that when you're making a film like Galaxy Quest, what you really hope is that your studio is busy somewhere else with either a higher profile movie, a movie with a much bigger budget, or a movie with bigger problems. And at the time they were filming Galaxy Quest, their studio were in the process of making Gladiator.
Ah, okay.
So that ticked all three boxes.
Wow.
Did they get away with more?
Yeah, so we can thank Oliver Reed for Galaxy Quest.
And a film ahead of its time as well, because obviously if you're if there's a lot of stock into the world of acting.
Mm.
And lying with acting.
Or politics, because... is now known.
Have you been back and watched it recently?
I haven't watched it in a while.
There are a lot of comparisons to present day politics.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it in so long. Probably, I think I watched that like 10 years ago was the last time I saw it.
Yeah, but I think it's going to mysteriously be turning up in the next day or so on Blu-ray.
Excellent.
Which
we haven't got it. It's not in my pile. I thought it was, but it's not.
Oh, we need to sort that out.
I've got
a DVD somewhere. I've just realised Morgan's not seen it, so we have to remedy that.
Definitely.
Really should, just for the references.
Oh, totally.
Because you get to explain them all, like you probably did for her first watch through of Doctor Who.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
What have you lost?
Huh?
What have you lost? Fair enough.
I found some.
Right. Well done.
I found some caffeine-free Diet Coke.
Are you having just the Diet Coke, or is that... Are you watering it down?
Just the Diet Coke.
Well done. Right. So, tonight, we are watching... I forget what it's called. Blank Blonk. It's not very popular episode. No one really likes it. At the end of the last podcast, I said, is it fair to say it's a modern classic, expecting at least some modicum of discussion or debate? And I got two yeses. I was like, oh, fine, fuck you then. So after we watch this, the question will be, why is it a modern classic?
So we have 44 minutes to work out exactly why.
You have 44 minutes to come up with some kind of vaguely intelligent answer, yes.
Okay.
Do you reckon you can do that?
Yes.
I know it's a classic, but I don't think I can convey to you just exactly why. But we'll find out in 44 minutes.
You certainly will. So, on that note, are we ready to watch Blink?
We are.
Yeah.
In that case, dear listener, as ever, when we press play, you press play, and we will watch the modern classic that is, as I may have said before, Blink. Are we ready?
Yeah.
3, 2, 1, and play. Thank you.
I've changed my mind.
Honestly, I'm having had this discussion with Khan over the course of the past couple of weeks about the family blood and human nature, about how he doesn't see it as good as everybody else makes it. I'm half expecting Khan to hate this episode now.
I loved this episode when I watched it first time round. it had me absolutely hooked from the off.
Mm.
And I've forgotten the really nice, creepy, gothic beginning.
There's only one bit of this that I dislike, and I'll point it out when we get to it. I don't like the weird moving statues in it. No, I'm like...
I wanted more clown noses.
Absolutely.
So when
I don't like the wallpaper.
Oh, wallpaper's terrible. Do you think it says Bad Wolf behind there? Oh, it doesn't.
Yeah, spelt really badly.
spelt by Bad Wolf, spelt by a racist.
It's not the first time Stephen Moffat's done a bad job of spelling Bad Wolf.
That's true.
It's a good job she ripped off all the extra wallpaper.
It really is, isn't it?
Because, I mean, she could have just ducked immediately when she saw the word duck.
Yeah, I mean, why would you not... Why are you still peeling off wallpaper and not ducking?
That wasn't now.
Nope, still hasn't ducked. There we go.
This episode was originally called Duck. They just think it didn't have that creepy quality about it. They just thought, we need to rename this.
So where are we in the real world time? Is this around 2007, 2008?
In real world, 2007. In Doctor Who, 2008.
Yeah, so we're in 2007. That's a very, very young Kerry Mulligan, isn't it?
It is. After this episode, was the master. Obviously, the master discussion was, well, she's going to be a future companion because she's awesome. And then she did Hollywood instead.
She did. So was this before or after an education?
I think it's before.
Ooh.
I think. It's got to be close, hasn't it?
It has, isn't it? It's got to be around that time. I've forgotten. I could actually look it up.
Jar of peanut butter and some ketchup.
What? Don't say random stuff while I'm not staring at the screen.
Probably more CRT tellies in this episode than the rest of Doctor Who.
You were getting caught up in a time where we're supposed to be talking about it, but we're actually watching it. dead ear.
People didn't have TVs like that in 2008. Well, that's quite a lot of TVs. Why has she got that many?
Okay, the ringtone fixed it.
There's a reason for it.
Oh, those ringtones had long gone by then, hadn't they?
Yeah, I think we moved on to polyphonic by then and real songs.
Yeah, we had.
Which you could download for $1.99 from the back of a magazine.
I had one of the first Windows smartphones, so I could plug my phone into my laptop and I could actually transfer MP3s across.
Oh, I did.
And
I think on my cheap phone.
I think if I remember correctly, you could put about three on there before your memory was full. I then worked...
I'm trying to remember how much space the MP3 player I had around this time was, but it fit about 18 songs on it.
Woo! Yeah. That many.
I know.
We were talking about MP3s and phones and stuff, and Sally asked her friend, why have you got so many TVs in your room? So it was almost as if they were going to answer the question we had, and then we said, like, how rubbish technology used to be.
And education was 2009.
There you go. Look, I found this place. There was this weird message, but we're going to walk around here for a bit before I show you the message.
Yeah. There was something about the statues. They're out there. Don't look at them. Oh, yeah, that one. Don't look at that one. And that one. And that one. And, oh, hello. This is a bit sort of Stephen Moffat stretching a point, isn't it?
Well, I think you know, Stephen Moffat, and we've talked about it before, but I think a lot of people don't like the fact that Stephen Moffat was doing one like season a year, and they had that kind of self-congratulatory thing because it took him twice as long to write as anyone else.
Yeah,
because he would stop and pat himself on the back. it didn't bother people so much. It didn't bother people so much when it was one a year, but when he was trying to do it like every couple of weeks, I think people took a bit of umbrage to it.
Yeah,
my iPad has decided to stop playing the episode.
Oh dear!
So I'm going to work out what's wrong while I was talking to you guys, and then play some sort of catch up with you.
Well, hang on. The bell has just rung,
and then stopped again.
Okay, well, I'm up to the point the bell has stopped. Calm.
Oh, I haven't paused. I've kept going.
It's because my iPlayer's decided to start installing a new version of itself while it's doing it.
How long is it going to take?
It's finished. I don't think apps did that.
Oh, that's brilliant. That's absolutely fantastic.
Right. I recommend we all aim for 6 minutes in. Head back to 6 minutes. It's a good timestamp.
That could be tricky on a Sky thingy.
You should be able to pick up the time.
No, because it does time remaining, you see, rather than...
Time remaining will be 37 minutes and 40 seconds.
You think I've got seconds on this thing?
Oh. Aim for the doorbell ringing.
I've got... Do you want me to go back to the doorbell?
I literally have the caption, doorbell rings, up on screen right now.
Shall I go back to that while we wait for John?
Yes.
I'm ready.
Oh, for crying out loud.
Johnny, the doorbell.
The doorbell just rang, and it was a very kind of rubbish doorbell.
It's
like someone ringing the bell.
Find a little bit just to the point where the doorbell starts ringing.
Yeah, I'm just about. I'm at that point because I'm on 6 minutes at the moment.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go for it.
3, 2, 1, go. There we go. Doorbell. I'm glad we went back, because I missed the line, it could be a burglar.
Silhouette, but I guess it's someone.
Why do burglars ring doorbells?
They're rubbish burglars.
That sounds reasonable.
I love the fact that they've broken into a house, and they're concerned about someone breaking into the house.
I don't care about that. There we go. Doctor being mysterious again. It's funny, actually, because you don't... I don't know if I suppose it's not giving anything away. We have talked about it enough. You don't actually miss him, do you?
David Tennant and this episode, the Doctor?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's one of the big differences between this one and Love and Monsters. You almost get so caught up in the story that you almost forget he's not in it. Because he's in it enough. There's a lot of kind of background stuff. Almost like, ironically, when you find out more about it in this episode, there's almost a little kind of Dr. Easter eggs throughout. And then, you know, little things like I'm appearing on the television earlier. And whatnot. You just get kind of gripped in the story to an extent. And then, of course, you know, you think this is from the Doctor, but it's not.
This is the point where he actually start listening. How you doing, Morgan?
Yes. You freaked out. The Weeping Angels are a lot nicer than this one than they are in future episodes.
Nicer?
You know, it's not a bad way to kill somebody.
It's an interesting way of looking at it.
Catherine Costello, Nightingale.
Where are you getting that from?
From Kathy's middle name. Am I ahead of you?
She's currently walking about the field.
She's now met the guy on the wall.
Yeah, she's now talking to the guy eating an apple.
Yeah. Sorry, you missed Kathy's middle name is Costello, which just seems weird.
Well, not if you're a big fan. I mean, John Peel's middle name was
2007. She was born about 1987. How big was Elvis Costello in the late '80s?
Not that big, but if her dad was a big fan, he would have been in his 30s by then, so would have grown up listening to Costello at the end of the 70s.
May have been a fan of Abbott and Costello as well.
There he goes, he could be that. I mean, John Peel had his middle name of one of his kids was every single member of the Liverpool first team.
Really?
Yep, he couldn't, I think it's his eldest son, he couldn't pick a name, so he gave him all 11.
I thought John Peel had more kids than Johnson. So how many?
Well, three, I think.
Really?
I think it's just three. I think it's the eldest who's actually called Rush Dalgleish Clements, blah, 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 blah. He's got the whole lot in, is his middle name. Which he must be really delighted about if he ever has to give his full name at a passport control or something. Thankfully, Brexit happened and he never has to leave the country. Should we put the wallpaper off up here as well?
Hey, it's an old house.
Yeah, but how did that one not get her when she's not looking at it?
I absolutely adore the attention to detail on the angels from take to take.
Yeah.
In terms of, like, literally a head turn and a glance away, and it will change.
Yeah. And there's one bit that happens in a future Weeping Angel episode that I really don't like, where you actually witness one of them move.
Yeah.
And that never played well with me, because what I like about this is the fact that we never see it either. So it's almost like us viewing them affects them too.
Yeah, that's
so you get that kind of meta type thing where if you're not seeing them moving, it's almost as if you're thinking, oh, well, they're not moving because we can see them.
Yeah.
That's the background one there changing is awesome.
Yeah, that's what I loved about this episode at the time, was it all seemed to be happening as we watched it.
Yeah. So I get quite annoyed when they actually do it.
Time of Angels?
Maybe Time of Angels. You actually see one of them turn its head, and that really just ruined the whole thing for me. That's so pedantic.
Series 7 and the Empire State Building kind of ruined them for me anyway, but
yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, you've got to believe that nobody was looking at the Empire State Building, which is nigh on impossible.
Oh, I don't know. I've managed to go 40-odd years on this planet, and I've never looked at the Empire State Building.
Yep, but there has to be at any given time in the city that never sleeps. Yeah, you'd imagine somebody might be glancing in its general direction.
Well, true. Yeah.
I'm not relying on just one person to keep their eyes off. I think
that's how it works. On the basis that one person has never looked at it, it's all fine.
Yes.
Hang on, 2007.
Yep.
Ah.
I've never noticed that before.
Yeah, I've never noticed it either. But I suppose. Just because our continuity in terms of like what was happening with Rose, etc., has been forward to that. They also did an episode in 2012 as a time travel show.
Everything's still supposed to be a year ahead. However, I suppose that we are a year ahead by the end of the episode, aren't we?
Yeah.
Because we don't know how much time passes before these events and the Doctor actually appearing at the end.
Yeah, but you can also, because it's a time travel show, just because the continuity from Martha's perspective is supposed to be 2008 doesn't necessarily mean they can't have an adventure in 2007.
Yeah. Very good point.
Yeah.
I never noticed that before, but one of the albums they pause on is Angel Smith.
Yeah.
which I'm sure means nothing, but I like it.
Lots of jars there. Those are definitely used for weed, aren't they?
Yep. Who has a with poster the second of advertising this,
should justify our star billing for the episode.
There's far too many folders there for a badly organised record shop.
Yeah.
I guess this counts as the Doctor being in the scene, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I'm now looking for meaning in everything around. Like, is that monster behind him? Does that appear in a different episode at a different time?
And the answer would be no.
Yeah. Shame.
It's kind of yellow and rubbery, so it could be a classic monster.
Oh, yes. It was probably in a Sylvester McCoy episode.
It's a destroyer from Battlefield.
Your Sylvester McCoy knowledge is worrying.
I love Sylvester McCoy.
I know, bless you. Oh, Laura's gone.
Yep, still here.
Blank.
Do you know what? I was genuinely going to do that for this episode. I was going to put up a picture of a weeping angel behind me, and then when John went for a wee, I was going to change it to a...
I love it regular.
I was going to do that.
You know, there's inevitably going to be a point where I go away to go to the toilet. You went, all right.
You're an old man.
Yep. She's just putting a bucket in. You just see this traumatised look in Morgan's face and you go, this episode's really getting to her. Oh. She's watching her dad wee into a jar.
See, I just wee on the sofa and blame the dogs.
Good call. We don't have dogs.
Do what?
I've sat on your sofas.
You have?
If you weed on.
Well, if it was either me or the dog.
One or t'other.
It definitely wasn't the cat. What are you doing now? I always worry when you start concentrating and pointing your finger.
I'm trying to find something from this episode because there was there was a website which had all of the all of these scenes recorded.
Yeah.
But there's one that's missing and I can't remember what it is. There's one that wasn't used from that recording.
Ah.
I don't know if it's on the DVD, John.
I think it is on the DVD.
It's on the DVD.
Why has it got Cunard White Star's sticker? That isn't the ship they're on come Christmas time, is it?
So are we getting caught up in the episode again? We stopped talking?
Yeah, sorry, I half expected that to be Adrian Edmondson from Bancroft. Which would be a fantastic mashup episode. Gosh, she looks young there.
She does. Great, isn't it?
Yeah.
And they're going. So we're doing what we're...
And at least the rain's going down, not up.
Yes.
Oh, God, well, can you imagine weeping angels in space?
Weeping angels on the moon.
Weeping moon.
In a weirdly dug-out hospital.
There's a lot of people in this episode that are very, very quick to crack on to Sally Sparrow.
Yeah.
Well, it was 2007. You did.
It's a simpler time.
Yes. A woman looking at you was just kind of taken as is implied, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah. Police officer says, right, I'll interview you. I'll interview you down in this abandoned car park.
Yep. And she just goes, yeah, that sounds very reasonable. Nothing bad can happen there. How did... Have we explained how that got there yet, or have I been talking over it?
It's been there for years, hasn't it?
Yeah. She's got the key.
Of course, yes. There we go.
That's so important, wasn't it?
Detective Inspector Shipton.
Surely, if a DI wanted to take it for a drink,
it's a good job he came up with something quotable there, isn't it?
Do what?
That whole life is short and you are hot. It's a good job he said that and then remembered it for 38 years.
Well, it is the sort of line you'd remember, probably.
And if it must have, like, he just said, "How's about it, darling?" And then 38 years later, and later on, when you see him, he just kind of goes, "How's about it, darling?" And just looks like some old lech.
Well, old lech, young lech, all men are the same.
They are.
I mean, surely you wonder where they came from because they weren't there a second ago.
They move very quickly. That's established later on.
Oh, I know. No, I mean from his point
of view. No, but yeah, why would you wander over?
Yeah.
I suppose he's not aware of the implications of what they are.
And equally, why don't they move when he looks away from the one he's closest to? This is the one tiny inconsistency, the one tiny, tiny flaw, which makes it perfect.
They're messing with him a bit.
Ah, that'll be it. They're young weeping angels.
Yeah.
Weeping.
No, they are just reinforcing the name of the title, let's be honest.
It's Weeping Angel Bants.
Because he hasn't blinked since he first looked over there, and they were just waiting for that moment.
Ah, now it's all clear, yes.
Yeah, because if otherwise the episode would be, don't look in a general direction.
Or are they implying that all young black men are on coke, which is why he didn't blink?
Stephen Moffat, you scamp.
Here's a question for you.
I'll go
when on. You thought that there was going to be a Doctor Who episode called Listen, did you think that it may have a similar kind of plot line to this?
No.
Because it's a Moffat episode, isn't it, Listen?
Is it?
Isn't it?
I can't remember.
If you say so.
I think it might be, actually. And then there's third part of the trilogy is called Smell.
And then Taste.
Oh, that'll be a Chibnall episode. All about chlorinated chicken.
Or they could just call it Stinks.
Well, technically, in Series 10, we had Sight, so...
Okay. But no, to answer your question, I didn't draw any parallels between the two, largely because...
I thought it may have had some kind of... link.
Yeah, I can see why you would, but I, as we've already established, I don't tend to think about such things and I forget stuff.
Yeah, just a lot cleverer than you.
Yeah. I'm not sure if I preferred the little toy robot. Or was that Matt Smith? That wasn't a rhetorical question, by the way. That did require an answer.
Oh.
Little toy?
The little toy robot. used to detect stuff? Was that, or was that a Matt Smith?
I don't know what you mean.
Part of the Doctor making weird detectory things out of weird stuff. At some point, he uses a little toy silver robot thing.
He uses a Sideman head.
No, I know that. That's a bit bigger.
I'm not sure. I don't recall.
I'm sure he does. Way down the line. Oh, God, I'm going to...
Well, come to it in about 8 months' time, you go, see?
Yeah, I will.
Told you.
Totally.
Although is that probably your natural lesson?
That'll probably be a quite deliberately skipped episode because Laura doesn't like me being right. To be fair, it doesn't happen often, but... That's quite clever.
Yeah, Stephen Moffat's
just... convenient they didn't move.
Yeah. Well, you know...
Ended up in exactly the same area to end up in the same hospital.
That's
well, I've
never noticed that mirror before.
The
doctor sent him to send her a message, though, didn't he? He said, there's something I need you to do for me. So he probably said that involves you having to hang about for your entire life in this.
Yeah.
Or if you do jaunt off somewhere, make sure you're back for such and such.
There we go.
Considering he's on the verge of death, he's also very, very lucid.
And quite a lot.
Very chirpy suddenly.
He is, isn't he? He wouldn't
need... He knows he's about to die like within the hour.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, I remember the time I had to take my cat to the vets for the final time and he tried to walk away. So, you know, as the end comes, you tend to get a little bit chirpy and think you can go for a walk.
And she clearly proved already that she clearly gets his blood flowing a wee bit.
Yep. I mean, have we actually established why she went to the hospital to see a man she'd not previously met? Who's that age?
I think it was mentioned in Edward where you were having your delusion about Matt Smith and
the
robot.
Okay, as long as it was established, well, that robot thing fucking existed. It might not have been a robot. It was some big chunky silver thing that had a bit of a thing. He was using it to detect stuff.
Cyberman head.
No, I remember that. That was stuck to a thing and he talked to it. No, it wasn't that. It was smaller. I think it was tenant thing.
You're not getting it mixed up with something that happened in Terminator Genesis or or the episode that Matt Smith appeared of in Secret Diary of a Call Girl.
That wasn't a robot.
That wasn't a robot. But he finally found Rose again.
Yeah, I mean, it had a run-off switch. But... device. Yeah, no, they definitely have... Oh, bollocks to the pair of you. I know I'm right. Oh. This is such a good episode.
Doctor telling me has...
Excuse me. Brains
is awfully specific and really morbid.
Yep.
Yeah.
How did they manage in 2007 to find a hospital ward that only had one bed being used?
Also, how did David Tennant know specifically that he was going to die on that day when the rain was going to stop?
Yeah.
Well, okay. Because he managed to pop back and then disappear again.
What? Where?
She's only got 17 DVDs. All right, sorry.
Ooh.
Is it that weird for in 2007 for someone to only have 17 DVDs?
Yeah,
that's just odd.
I mean, if it was me, the doctor could have basically told me exactly 100% what he needed me to do. If it was every DVD, I'd be right, okay, go to Mulholland Drive.
Yeah.
And I'll give you a 3-hour behind the scenes.
I mean, if he did it for me, it'll be alphabetized, but it'll be in that other pile of the stuff he hasn't yet watched, or it'll be in that other pile of stuff he's giving away but hasn't got round to doing yet.
Oh, also there'll be like three versions of the same film as well.
Yeah, that's the other thing you have to factor in. No, you want the Blu-ray, not the original DVD release.
The doctor probably tried to communicate with me through DVD access and just gave up. Screw this. This is too complicated even for me.
Yeah.
I'll go find Sally Sparrow.
Then he found out the one he actually needed to use, you still had on VHS because they hadn't got around to reissuing it.
Martha.
Got a support in, which is why we hang around in under bridges.
Yeah, and also, best win of the world, black woman trying to get a job in 1969 could be a little tricky.
It's a fair point.
You know. He was the one, he would have had to go out to work. She wouldn't have had to.
Well, again, there's a big finish. Have we got it?
Well, do you know what? They're probably doing it as we speak. Martha on benefits.
Doctor Who on Benefit Street. Now, all I'm just getting is pictures of Inspector Gadget, which isn't the same thing. It definitely happened. It was a thing. I'm going to need Morgan to spot it, because I've forgotten we've had this conversation by the time we get to that episode in about 3 years' time. Oh, his handwriting's worse than mine.
Yeah, that looks. Is he writing in shorthand, possibly?
I think he is, but there's just absolutely no way he'd know shorthand. Is that the first time that occurs?
Yes.
The old bootstrap paradox.
No, wibbly wobbly timey wimey.
Yeah, it's
wobbly-wobbly.
That's it.
Oh,
because I thought that. Well, I always thought that was a Matt Smith thing.
Is that this episode, though?
What? I thought it was a Matt Smith thing, so I didn't know that had come in earlier than that.
No, this is the first episode he mentioned it, but that's the one thing about this episode I don't like, because I just don't like the phrase.
I like it. I think it kind of works, but then I also like Jeremy Bearmy.
I like Jeremy Bearmy also. Jeremy Bearmy's great. I love how it affects Cheedy.
Yeah.
He just looks like he's having a nervous collapse.
But you can't like Jeremy Bearmy and not like Timey Wimey.
Well, yes, you can.
It's the same thing.
No, it's not.
Can I just point out that the fact that they freeze the second that they get any kind of human eye contact is my first 3 years of comedy in a statement.
Which is why you like doing your show with a screen and a projector so you can have your back to the audience.
Yes.
Sounds perfectly reasonable. Now, see, that's not the worst thing in the world, because if that's the trade-off between no longer having a hate-filled tabloid...
Well, technically, they did switch off the Sun on Sunday. Oh no, it was the News of the World. They switched on the Sun on Sunday.
They switched on the Sun on Sunday. You see, that's what happened when we didn't give them the time access to the stuff in the TARDIS. That's what happened.
Someone asked Stephen Moffat why people didn't just walk about the Weeping Angels just kind of winking, like the left eye and the right eye. Just and then they would survive. And Stephen Moffat just said, "Have you tried it?" So clearly he had.
Yeah.
He just kind of.
Well, how would sunglasses play out?
If you knew that there were four, could you play them off against each other without the way that it ends up finishing?
So no, still... but they've got the. You couldn't because they're aware of the fact they can't look at each other either, which is why sometimes they've got their hands like that. And so they do a pretty damn good job of avoiding each other's gaze, and it's not until they're taken by surprise.
Okay.
Yeah. So but yeah, I suppose to an extent, if you were quick enough, you could, but they seem to be pretty on the ball. They're,
yeah.
They can move, like, in the blink of an eye.
They've done their Joe Wicks warm-up videos, haven't they? If only there was, like, lots of glass in the door or something.
The thing about the Weeping Angels is that Steve Moffat, because they were so successful, Steve Moffat probably overused them a little bit. I know we've had the discussion about how many times they actually made a reappearance, but if they had just appeared in this one episode and never again, it would be infinitely more iconic than I think they are.
Yeah, definitely.
I know what you're saying, and I don't necessarily disagree with you, but I think the nature of the beast, if you come up with a monster that's this good...
that you just have to use it?
Yeah, people are going to want... It's like the only reason the Daleks are the Daleks and are that iconic and are that huge is because they've been met so many times.
Yeah.
And the Cybermen... one scary episode, we all remember that and we go away, but we remember them as being the nemesis because we meet them again and again. And I think that's the thing. I'm not saying they're necessarily used well.
But it's just the writing then, because yeah. They have been written differently, like obviously in the Time of Angels, and they actually start killing as opposed to just sending people back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which then kind of gets retconned again in Angels Take Manhattan.
Yep.
I think here's one though, because my thought when I first watched this was, imagine if you know that they're going to catch you. I think the scariest thing to me would be thinking, what if your potential energy meant that you were supposed to die within like the next 6 months? So they send you back to 6 months ago, so you're like, shit.
So it's almost like you have to live.
Everybody who gets sent back like 60 or 70 years.
Yeah.
Nobody only ever gets sent back 6 months.
Yeah.
So if somebody didn't know that they were like dying of something.
I suppose it would just move
on. And then you suddenly find that you've been taken back in time. You're aware that you've been taken back in time by them, and you know it's because of your potential energy.
Yeah.
You've been taken back to like 3 weeks before, meaning that you were going to die 3 weeks. You've only got 3 weeks left to live.
Yeah, that'd be a bit of a bugger, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but I suppose the thing is, the victims probably don't have that same level of insight as we do.
Well, of course not. Unless you're with the doctor and he tells you.
Yeah.
Which he would, he's that kind of guy.
Yeah. But, you know, you go back to 6 months and go, I get away with that quite easily, you know.
Of course there's a DVD player on the TARDIS. I mean, surely the TARDIS would have had a 4K Blu-ray player. Already.
Probably does have that too, but it'll be backward compatible.
I mean, I'm amazed they haven't still got a Betamax player in just off the main library.
The only thing it doesn't have is Laserdisc. It just refuses.
But does have mini disc.
Does.
How are they going?
I know it's showing the interdimensional dimensions again, yeah, of TARDIS. But it's always a good job that they're still exactly there.
It is rather handy, isn't it?
It's difficult to convey that in the external dimensions internally. because, you know, the TARDIS is so much larger on the outside, and you would think, but from their perspective, suddenly the angels were just in the middle of the control room, which technically they wouldn't have been. They'd have been like...
Yeah. But they'd have been...
scattered from one end to the other.
Yeah.
But also, the minute they spotted one of their kin across the way, surely they would have moved.
They don't have the chance, because it's like...
Oh, it's like an instant thing, isn't it?
Yeah, except as soon as the TARDIS becomes transparent, they're kind of quantum locked, because they can see each other.
They don't...
Right, 1 year later, there you go, 1 year later. Thank now you. We're in 2008.
Yep. When they're locked in that circle, square, whatever you want to call it, they're not looking at each other opposites, which is what you would think you would need to do to be caught. One of them is actually looking at the person to their left, who is looking at a different one. So they're not actually looking at each other.
All they need to do is be in each other's line of sight. They don't need to be.
But you have to actually be looking at each other, don't you?
No, you just need to be, even if they saw you in a peripheral vision, that'd be enough.
But that would mean, whenever they're converging on something, they would have to do it in a straight line.
No, you actually see them sometimes doing this, and
so they can. I think there's a slight flaw in the can never look at each other argument.
Yes, it's full of flaws.
But I'm not saying that to take anything away from this episode, because it is an absolutely brilliant episode. So shut up, Laura. I dread to think what the cost of that taxi was coming all the way back from 1967. Oh, mate, I don't normally transverse through time and space at this time of night on a Thursday.
The doctor was actually having a heated discussion with Martha and the taxi kind of going, but what I'm saying is that all lives...
Not now, mate.
Yeah, it's only 20 minutes from Red Hatching. Come on.
They do kind of gear up for future assistant there, don't they?
Yeah, he's almost in. He's in the bitch, says Martha.
Yeah.
Says the bitch, Martha, I'm coming looking for you.
And then she went and, like you said, got an agent, got a film career.
That could have been Amy and Rory. There you go, you've got a wee kind of power couple now.
Oh, that would have been fantastic. Amy and Rory... and running a record shop.
They are kind of Amy and Rory-ish, are you?
Yeah.
As in Series 5, strong, assertive woman, doofus, boyfriend.
Yep. Yeah. Because all strong, assertive women have doofus boyfriends.
And maybe the first time I've ever used the word doofus.
And possibly the last.
No. I think we should say doofus every episode.
He gets his own Lone Centurion Big Finish spin-off.
I also like the fact that the ending is actually very now, for want of a better word, with all the statues.
Yeah.
It suddenly has a modern
relevance. He did put Jack in the trailer for the next one. There you go.
Yeah. Oh, good. That's Derek Jacobi, isn't it?
Yeah.
Which, of course, if you haven't watched Torchwood, people are going, oh, why is Jack, you know, what? Because the last...
He was left on the old Satellite 5, like, years of the future, was he?
What's he doing here?
Timey-wimey, wibbly-wobbly. Right, then.
Why did you enjoy that, Morgan?
Yes, first off, Morgan, how was it? Was it good?
It was amazing.
Did you get scared?
No. I don't like it when they show their fangs.
Well, I don't like it when you show your fangs.
Morgan's fangs are scarier.
What, you used to have fangs? Because there's a great thing, there's a great kind of transitionary period for kids when they're losing their first teeth and they lose all their front teeth and they just look like little nasty vampires.
They do.
Yeah.
You remind me of something that I've seen during the course of this lockdown. It's probably the most disturbing thing. That image of kids having an x-ray on their teeth and like their baby teeth are all of their other teeth are slightly just higher weird. And like they're just ready to come through. So it looks
horrible.
Horrible.
Morgan's got an extra tooth that's coming out the gum. And it's just like, ugh.
That's just wrong.
It does. It's not sore, but it freaks me out. I wake up in a cold sweat in the middle of the night going, tooth!
I mean, the other thing you've got to remember is small children are just basically young vampires. They bleed it dry. Anyway, right. So then, ladies and gentlemen, over to you. Why is that a modern classic? Discuss.
Morgan first.
Because that's when the Doctor goes into detail that he's a time traveller.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's quite a good point. It's the most kind of time travel episode we've had thus far, I think.
Yeah. It's a very, very brave move.
I'm a massive fan of a really shit film.
So what?
I'm a massive fan of a really shit film, which is The Butterfly Effect.
Okay.
Oh, yes, Ashton Kutcher.
Yeah. Have you seen the two sequels?
Yes.
Have you seen them both?
I bought the trilogy.
Oh, God.
No, the second one is awful. The third one's not that bad. But the first one is a film I can re-watch because I love the whole bootstrap paradox idea of something obviously changing. It's a whole Back to the Future idea, which obviously gets mentioned again repeatedly throughout Endgame.
Yep.
From last year, and obviously there are different theories about how time travel would work and whether something in the past would affect something in the future in that way. Mm-hmm. This episode has everything about that for me personally.
Okay, yep.
We only get to see 1969 twice, once the video, once in the tunnel.
Yeah.
And everything that happens back in 1969 in this episode obviously has an effect on the future. And it's like, it's not quite the butterfly effect in my head condensed into one episode.
It's not far off.
The ideas are there.
Yeah.
So for the story and for what the actual time travel ideas of it are, I just love them. They resonate with me really, really well. That's why. Stick on that. A decent cast. I don't think he's perfect.
No, he's the weak link in it. I think the
boyfriend is just like Rory, like Junior. Yeah,
totally.
It's not a brilliant character. Sally Sparrow is awesome.
Yeah. And if you're going to get anybody to try and hold an episode together in the absence of the Doctor, you can't go far wrong with Carey Mulligan.
Yeah.
Better than Peter Kay.
In so many ways.
I think it's done really, really well. It was original for 2007. There are films that have obviously done this since and before, but worse. It's a great, great, great episode.
Yeah. I mean, it was a brave move saying to Morgan, go first, because she offered a level of insight that you then had to come up against.
Yep. Although she said it it was a lot simpler and a lot less wibbly wobbly timey wimey.
Yeah, she nailed it.
She pretty much nailed it for me as well up until this point. The closest you come to anything resembling this would be at the beginning of Smith and Jones.
Mm.
We are a hands of the tie. It goes, hey, look, here's the tie, blah, blah, blah. And then it gets the payoff at the end. For a time travel show up until this point, there wasn't very much in the way of kind of paradoxical stuff happening.
That's very true, which brings me, it's just made me think, was there, up until this point, a level of was it a level of presumed knowledge? So when they brought Doctor Who back, they went, well, everyone knows what Doctor Who is. We don't need to explain this stuff. Or was it that they didn't think that would sell?
I think the problem is possibly too complicated.
Well, yeah. I think you're right.
Yeah.
I think there's a level back when Doctor Who was like half an hour long where you had to put everything so concisely that you didn't have time to explain everything by that. But, I mean, look at the level of detail that goes into Netflix shows now where we get so much character building for the most minute character. Have either of you seen The Boys on Amazon?
Not yet, no.
It's on the list because I've read some of the comic run, Garth Ennis.
It's excellent.
Okay.
The Boys is excellent because there's not a single character on there who isn't used, so maybe not a lot happens in every single episode, which over the course of a 24-episode run of something gets, like, tiresome.
Yeah.
In American drama. But it's, like, eight episodes long. It may be six. I think it's eight. So everything is so tight. So you have a load of action thrown at you. You have so much characterization thrown at you.
Yeah.
That I think it's almost a perfect embodiment of what something can be in terms of drama.
Yeah.
And you stick it to something like Doctor Who where we have an episode like this where you have no Doctor, say for like 2 minutes of actual Doctorism.
Yep.
And you're relying on a character to be there with a... So quickly, like jumping straight in, you have a character who has a background. We know about her. We know her friends. We know who she is. We have a fantastic actress who can display all of this.
Yep.
And I think...
I'm kind of reminded a little bit of... I'm guaranteeing now the answer will be no, but have either of you watched All Is Lost?
No.
It's basically, the whole film is Robert Redford on a boat, and that's it. But it's brilliant, and it's amazing.
Well, you've sold it.
Yeah, it's stunning. And there's only about two lines of dialogue in the whole 90 minutes. But, like you were saying there about you knew the character just from the writing, there's little, they do that in that film, in that they establish who the character is without dialogue, just by how he looks, how he acts, and how he behaves. And that, I think, was what worked so well in this episode, that you embedded in the characters without having to do lots of expositional dialogue. I finished rambling then.
Well, there's another thing that's just occurred to me as well. This is the opposite of Love and Monsters in its approach, and that somehow the characters in Love and Monsters seemed less relatable on account of the fact that it was a group of people that knew the Doctor. So that's one of the fundamental differences.
Yeah.
Is, you know, Mark Warren's character, etc. They've got like this kind of secret society of people that are looking for the Doctor, whereas that in this one, Sally Sparrow doesn't have a clue what's going on around her, and she just kind of goes with the flow. And you know, she's finding, she's getting all these kind of clues as to what's going on through just tearing back wallpaper or writing stuff down and catching DVD extras, and it all seems to be happening to her. And then you find out at the end that it's because she hands it information over the Doctor, and you know, it's all, you know, so that kind of, that again, going back to the kind of bootstrap paradox type thing.
Yeah.
But the approach is that the Doctor is a complete stranger to Sally Sparrow.
Yeah.
Is that where Turn Left works? Because you've obviously got no Doctor in that. Nobody is aware of the Doctor apart from obviously Rose coming in, blah, blah, blah. And people are left to their own devices and they have to work things out for themselves, particularly obviously Donna.
And it's got the added bonus of Donna also being a character that you know and can relate to, but she still doesn't have that fundamental knowledge of the Doctor.
Yeah, possibly. It's possibly different between this and Love and Monsters, because there's only really the three Doctor-like episodes, these three, aren't there? Nothing else really close.
But see, I always felt Love and Monsters didn't really stack up for a number of reasons, but that whole secret society thing doesn't really fly, I don't think.
The whole secret society that was supposed to discover more about the Doctor suddenly becoming an ELO tribute act.
Yeah.
I think that's the biggest issue I have.
Perfect on paper. But again, I'm just, you know, obviously maybe thinking too much about this as well. It's got real kind of real shades of River Song as well. And at the beginning of the episode, Sally Sparrow doesn't know who the Doctor is. And by the end of the episode, she knows exactly who he is, but the Doctor doesn't know who she is.
Yeah. That's also true. I like that.
Yeah. So, I mean,
you can almost see where...
It's taken 45 minutes.
You can almost see as well where he was getting ideas or where he would get ideas from down the line, can't you?
Yeah,
that comes up in about 14 episodes' time.
Yeah.
Yep. I'm now, even just having said it out loud, I'm almost convinced that they potentially created Sally Sparrow, couldn't use her, and then created Amy and Rory. I'm starting to see that kind of dynamic between characters as possibly with Stephen Moffat. Stephen Moffat, it looks pretty early on like Stephen Moffat was seeding himself for this job. And, Silence in the Library and stuff, he set off the whole kind of River Song thing there, but it seems like he was thinking, you know, I'm next in line for this.
Well, he'd already got it by the time... Silence in the Library was...
Oh, yeah, definitely, for sure. But I think he was fighting for it before then.
Yeah.
He knew then, and he wanted it. I think you're very, very right. And I think that, But does that mean that in some parallel universe that Carey Mulligan ended up doing Series 5 to Series 7 and she ended up being Nebula?
Yes, I believe there is.
Yep.
There is a parallel universe where Karen Gillan is still an unknown and Carey Mulligan ended up in Marvel.
Yes.
Yep.
However, that is offset by it was actually Chibnall who then takes over the run. Moffat takes over after Chibnall. So, you know, swings and roundabouts.
Well, again, there's a parallel universe going back to 42, where the cast of 42 go into Hollywood with some dinosaurs on a spaceship. And that's an entire Marvel premise right there.
Yeah. The characters from 42 also had their own Torchwood-style spin-off show for the BBC, rather than having to wait for Big Finish to come knocking on the door.
But then you've got to factor in that there's the other parallel universe where actually Peter Kay doesn't appear in a Doctor Who episode, and it turns out to be rather a good one.
Yeah. Or even worse, because it doesn't appear in that episode, it opens the door for him to become the 11th Doctor.
Oh, that's even worse. I think that's where you get Mark Warren.
Just be grateful for what you had.
Right. Well, we actually appeared to delve into some insight there, which I can only apologise for. That wasn't planned. We'll try and get back to our normal levels of banality. Is it Sunday we're going next?
Yes.
Yeah, that's normal.
Yeah.
Unless you get football on.
No. We haven't. We have a game tomorrow night and then an 8-day break before next Thursday, because apparently that's how time works now.
Is next Thursday the big one for you, potentially?
Well, it will be the big one anyway, but if we do what we're supposed to do tomorrow night, it'll be the even bigger one.
Ooh.
And as long as no one flies a plane over the Etihad, we'll be fine.
Yeah. From Blackpool Airport, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's all kind of cliched, but stop it, fuck off, Galway. Anyway, right, that was the modern classic that is Blink. Morgan explained why it was brilliant. Laura piggybacked that and gave you some body, back more body to the argument, and John just looked, sat there and nodded and agreed.
Pretty much.
This has been an Unsalted Popcorn Podcast. Over there in the hat and the glasses, it's been Laura Monmouth.
Pleasure, as always.
pay attention. Over on the other side, looking resplendent in rainbows and ears, has been Morgan.
Oh, bye.
See, she can explain blank, but she doesn't know whether she's coming or going.
Morgan's back
and
on form.
She's got some kind of parrot on her head as well.
Ah, that might just be the angle you're looking at.
Just the angle. Okay. She's very
sitting next to Morgan, still looking slightly befuddled, is a man who once ate vegan pizza and had a heart attack. It's John.
Hey, good night, everyone.
Good night, everyone. And we will see you again on... What's next? What's next? What are we watching?
On to Utopia.
We shall see you on Sunday, ladies and gentlemen, for Utopia. In the meantime, goodbye.
Bye.